You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Each week, Ellen Little, my co-host, and I sit here in the studio and talk to guests about everything under the sun. Anything that people want to talk about, they can come on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, whether it's a book, whether it's running for office, whether it's trying to sell a product, maybe you're an activist, maybe you run a nonprofit, whatever it is, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends gives out the valuable information that people want to hear and know about, and we just have an interesting conversation, right, Miss Ellen?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. It's exciting every single week.
Right, and thank you for working behind the scenes feverishly to fix our link.
Yes, iTunes is the only thing that's down right now. Everything else is working, so thank you to Paul for giving us all the good stuff and all the backup plans.
Thanks for CDs. It's
Amen.
A great thing that he was able to burn the CDs for us. Yes. So for our guests who are tuning in today, we have a really action-packed show today. The first guest is going to be my good friend is in the studio. Her name is Jean Ott and her husband, Carl. And, you know, Jean and I, we've known each other for quite a long time, and Carl. And I have to say, when I ran for office, one of the first checks I got in the mail was from a woman named Jean Ott and Carl Ott. And you know how things stick out in your memory forever and ever, amen? Those two names have stuck in my mind, the kindness of strangers. So thank you for being here in the studio with us. And my friend, Kat Madaledo, Maldonado, right, Ellen? Can you say that? It's a mouthful.
Maldonado, yes.
Yeah, it's very
actually
easy.
I have another friend with that same last name we were talking about.
Kat and I are friends as well. She also was one of my supporters when I ran for office. And, you know, a lot of people want to come on the show and just join in the experience with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And why not? If you find something that's fun and working and get people out of the house and give them some fun things to do, why not? That's just how it is, right? So my guest today is Jennifer Ott, and she is the daughter of Carl and Jean Ott, and she's going to be calling in from Long Beach, California. She is the author of several books ranging from satire, crime drama, to historical fiction. Currently, she's writing two books. It's called Arise, My Tribe, about an Iron Age Celtic healer, weaving her tale through the journey of a modern-day woman in today's world. That sounds like quite a book.
Yeah, exciting.
It's exciting. Yeah. It makes me think of the Renaissance Fair.
That's right.
Yeah, it does.
Right.
And
exactly what I thought.
She also captures her characters through, she draws as well. And you were saying, Kat, that you were looking at her website earlier.
Yes, yeah, beautiful.
It is. Stuff. Good art. It's almost like what
creative.
You do. You're creative with hair.
I try to be.
Right.
A little bit.
And but before we chat with Jennifer, national news. Everyone is talking about the Jeffrey Epstein case and him being found dead in his, well, they said he committed suicide. We're not sure what happened. But, you know, as a nurse, I have to say, nursing 101, if you have a patient who is on suicide watch, you do monitor that person.
Right.
It doesn't matter if the person is rich or poor, black or white, from what part of the world, but it's deemed necessary that this person should be watched.
Well, and they said that he was supposed to have 30-minute checks. Every 30 minutes they were supposed to check,
right.
And they said they actually admitted to the fact that they hadn't been doing that.
Right, so I don't understand how that could have happened, but I guess we're waiting to hear the results from the coroner's report to see exactly what happened. But I'm just saying, Ellen, you know, it's kind of like politics. What happened? I mean, it's like every day we wake up, we have gun violence.
Yeah.
We have now the little children are being abused by grown men. Mm-hmm. We have human trafficking. We have people that with so much resources that are using it for such horrible things. I mean, it's like every day you wake up and you want to say, stop. Can the world just rewind a little bit to when we felt safe? And I see Kat's shaking her head.
And they
had
the thing on for the immigrants as well about the kids getting separated. You know, they were at school, and basically they came out of school, and their parents were gone.
Can you imagine your parents dropping you off to school and coming home, and there's no one there for you?
No, I can't.
I mean, I remember, back home in Trinidad and Tobago, when we were kids, we always went home to a pot of rice and curry something, whether it was curry potato or yams or chicken, whatever we had. We didn't have a lot of meat, but we had something. And we would have, we would smell the food before we got, it meant your mother was home.
Right.
And so these children, I mean, I saw that little girl, 11 years old, crying and begging the government to release her father. And it just broke my heart. I mean, it's almost like people are, they're devoid of empathy. They're just using children as a pawn. Children as a pawn. The children that so many people claim that they're pro-life and they love children. You're not supposed to only care about the kids in the wombs. Yep. Care about them when they come out as well, right?
Yes.
When they're born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to be taking more breaks from the news, but unfortunately we need to also keep getting involved because there's just too much.
Well, it's hard not to get involved, you know, because we are conditioned as human beings to have compassion, to care, to promote peace and unity and prosperity. And what do we do when someone dies? We console people. So it doesn't matter if you have a position in your company or if you're the president or if you're a senator, you're a human being first. And so people want to be consoled when there's grief. I mean, you know, people are dying at the hands of these guns, these assault rifles that are in the hands of folks that are deemed, you know, have a mental issue or their background check wasn't checked. Or what the heck do you need 100 rounds for?
Right.
Which duck are you going to kill?
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, in the old days, you didn't have a refrigerator to put meat. Now you go to Publix and you buy your meat. What are you shooting with 100 rounds?
And that's another big part of the conversation is if we can't control the guns, we should at least be able to control the ammo. You know, nobody who's making ammunition is going to make 100 rounds.
Yes.
You know?
So, well, it's just common
sense.
It's
just some extra thought.
It's just common sense that, you know, you have to do unto others as you would like them to do unto you, and put people first and be thy brother's keeper for real. You know, and think about other people and think about the little child coming home from school because her parents didn't have the piece of paper, but have been living here for 8 years, working in a plant, bringing in an income, not being on the government dole. You know, you have to think about it's a whole process, right? So our guest is calling in from Long Beach, California, and for our friends who are listening on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I think we have author Jennifer Ott on the phone, who is also my friend too. Jennifer, welcome
Hello.
To Viewpoint with
Hi.
Sita and Friends.
Hello.
Hello, dear. Welcome to our show. We have Kat is sitting next to me. We have Ellen Little, and I don't know if you know it, but your parents are here with us. Just sitting in and listening to our show today as well. I absolutely loved him, and I invited him to come on in and share the show with us.
Oh, I'm so thankful, and I'm loving that they're there as well.
Great. So how's the weather where you're at this morning?
It's cloudy and cool, which is nice because it doesn't get hot then when the sun doesn't come up right away. So it's a nice, cool Monday morning.
Oh, well, we hear you loud and clear. Your voice is coming through over very crisp. Now, I want to tell you that I love your Facebook feeds as well. You're such an mm-hmm. earthly person. You're beautiful soul inside out. And anyone who reads your Facebook, I actually can feel your spirit that flows all the way to Florida. You really do want to see this world a peaceful, kind, mindful place. And I appreciate it. And I just love what you say sometimes. You are an author, girl. You know how to write.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think my sarcasm gets a little tricky for some people, but I mean well.
Yes. So tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing.
Oh, wow. I mean, I feel like I was a writer pretty much my entire life. I mean, I became really enthralled with stories pretty much by watching movies and just the human drama. And I think, like, the first movie that really captured my attention as a young girl was, believe it or not, The Bridge on the River Kwai, which I don't know if anybody has seen, but there was just such a huge human drama into it. And I think that was really compelled me. And I think it was, like, only 12 years old. And I started writing my first book at that time, but of course, you know, like, I was 12, and, you know, who can finish a book? You know, you can't barely even finish reading a book when you're 12, let alone write one. But I think that interest in pretty much in humanity pretty much has driven me throughout my entire life, and reading not just about, like, the good parts of humanity, but also the bad parts, about, you know, like, studying wars and terrorism and just getting into the heart of, you know, people who, you know, like, I was listening to your segment earlier, you know, as you were talking about, you know, these kids who, you know, mass murders and everything. And, you know, just even getting into their heart and understanding their why they do it can solve some of our problems. It's not just, you know, shining a good light, it's understanding the bottom, the darkness, really.
Right. I guess it's humanity, just trying to to understand what causes someone to do something like that. And oftentimes it points to the way a person was raised. They say we are our environment, right? A lot of times we are who we are because of the people that raised us and where we were raised and how, too. So I do. You're right. You're absolutely correct. But, you know, you had a meme on your Facebook, and I just cracked up this morning, and it was talked about, you know, it pretty much sums you up, my dear Jennifer Ott. It says, you're laying in bed and you're constructing perfect plots. You're standing in the shower and you're constructing perfect characters. You're driving and you have the perfect setting, and then you get home and it's a blank page. And, you know, I've gotten into plenty of trouble. I remember once I was sitting at work and talking to a patient, and the patient was telling me about his life story, owning a sawmill, and all his children are now grown and attended college, and nobody wants to carry on this legacy of the sawmill. And he was really distraught over it. And I said, you know, I should write this down because it's such a compelling story. So I wrote it on a napkin. And wouldn't you know, I blew my nose with the napkin. So I'm like, Sita. So I got home, I'm like, oops, there goes my information. But I chuckled when I heard about it. I'm like, I have to tell her not to write it on a napkin though when she's driving. So where do you get your inspiration for your characters from?
Really, a lot of it comes through meditation. I mean, I'm really big into meditation and studying meditation. And I honestly get a lot when I shut myself off, when I stop thinking, you know, about things, and I just allow, you know, the character. I mean, I feel kind of, you know, it's a little weird saying this, but I've heard other writers say it themselves. It's kind of like channeling. You let the characters and everything start speaking through you, that you're not actually constructing characters. You're actually allowing them to speak and allowing them to, you know, to talk. And the best way to do it is for me to just shut up, you know, and for me to just sit in silence and just allow, you know, inspiration to come to me. And usually it does. I mean, within the last couple of books I've written, well, pretty much most of the books I've written, they've come through me either as I was laying down to go to sleep and I hear the characters chatting in my head, or when I'm sitting in meditation and an idea will come to me and all of a sudden it floods into me. And so it's usually when I quiet myself is when I get the most inspiration.
I think Kat has a question for you.
Let me ask you, what brought you to write this book in the first place?
Yeah, which one? I think we're talking about Arise My Tribe, right? That's the one you want to talk about today. And Wolf Wild Heart.
Arise My Tribe is kind of funny in the way it started is... And it went through, it's kind of sort of based on my life story and sort of existential crises that I've had about, you know, myself and the, you know, kind of like the whole, I remember having a conversation with my dad like years ago about, you know, like Descartes' theory, like, who am I? You know, what am I here for? You know, that whole, you know, thing we get stuck on, like, what is my purpose here in life? And so I went through a couple, you know, crises throughout my life. And I kind of over the last summer came upon, like, just after meditations and everything, becoming really in touch with, and I, you know, kind of hate to say it, kind of sounds kind of silly, but my soul. And I was at this meditation retreat where we painted, And I actually painted this archetype, and when I looked at her, I said, ah, you know, that's my soul. That's her. And it was kind of joking, but she kind of resembled to me a matriarch of a Celtic tribe, ancient Celtic tribe. And so a Rise My Tribe is pretty much a story about through the eyes or through the lens of an ancient Celtic matriarch, a healer. And she tells her story, you know, weaving my tale into her story, and it kind of relates to, like, what it was like living in ancient times, you know, being really connected to the earth and to the sky and to the gods and nature and all that, versus what it's like to be living today.
Well, you know, you sometimes, when I read your posts, I know you have studied religion and other cultures, mm-hmm. but what you're describing is actually what my grandparents and parents told us was actually like some sort of a reincarnation. It's almost like you were here before, Jennifer. You were on Earth before.
I totally believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, I know you do.
And this is what this is. Yeah. And it really is a reincarnation type story. And it's basically telling the story of what happened 2,000 years in the past and how it relates to what I'm going through today. I kind of fictionalized it a little bit. But, I mean, that's kind of the story for what that is about. And it really is kind of compelling when you dive deep into, like, the Iron Age Celtic tribes and how they lived really in connection with nature.
Well, you know,
today we're so disconnected from nature.
We are. But, you know, Ellen and I had on our show a few times the fellas in town who puts on the Renaissance Fair. And I tell mm-hmm. you, when they come into studio, you can actually feel that time period as well.
Yes.
And we actually went to the fair a couple of times, and that's exactly how it is. It's just everyone is so merry and happy, and they're just dancing and having fun. And it's like for a couple of days here in Melbourne, Florida, we can forget about all the ills of society and just relax into that time period. And you're so right. It's almost like you feel this spirit that flows through the fair,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, I think what was really kind of compelling to me is the difference of, you know, like we pride ourselves on being modern and so technically advanced and so as people today. And yet, in some ways, I find in researching this for this book, I find it that they were in some ways more advanced than we are, even though they were considered probably a primitive people.
Right.
It's really kind of compelling to kind of make that distinction. Yeah, we're not as advanced as we think we are. We can learn a lot from the simple Celtic, you know, pastoral life that they had than what we have here. So it's really kind of compelling to write that book.
Well, you know, one of the things I have discovered working in nursing facilities, the people who lived to be over 100 had a couple of things in common. It was always mm-hmm. faith. It was always oatmeal, believe it or not. They all and they all believed in Jesus, which, you know, they have faith mm-hmm. from that time period. And they all lived to be over 100, but they also had trusted friends and family. And I mm-hmm. always say that back in the day, you know, now you have people going to restaurants and eating a fine breakfast and bacon and eggs and this and that. Mm-hmm. But these people, like you said, they were simple souls. They were simple people, and they just found joy in everything that was simple in their gardening and their family and their services and whatever. So I think you're right. There is something about today's modern world and how people lived back then, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope you meet Kat as well. She's in our studio today, and she's got another question for you.
Oh, sure.
Why spend years of your life writing it, this book?
Excuse me?
Like, how many years did you spend writing this book? How much time did it take?
How many years? It took me about 3 months.
Oh, really? That's amazing.
Sounds like it's a long process.
Well, it's just, you know, like, when it comes to me, you know, it comes out of me fast. I mean, it's sometimes, it's like when I was saying about how it's a, you know, a weird process, or just sort of letting the character speak through me, or letting them, when a character starts speaking, it's just, you know, I just need to shut up and just write, because they really start pouring it out. And then again, after it's all out, you know, the first draft is kind of completed, it's more or less then me going back and editing and fine-tuning and pulling it all together. But it really is kind of liberating to just kind of get myself out of the way, and it kind of my own ego out of the way on how, and it's kind of like, it's a lesson on not to put myself, it's to kind of let things flow and not try to control what's coming out. Because I think a lot of times a lot of authors will try to control the story and control the characters, and then they get caught up in, you know, the writer's block, and then they get caught up in not being able to put it, the words on the page. But when you put yourself aside and then you let the story tell itself.
3 months, it really, that's amazing. Up. It really is, because it does sound like you took longer. We've had authors in here that it took them years to write a book. I'm so proud of you. Now, your character, your main character in Arise My Tribe, Jace Martin, she sounds like how most people in their 30s sound these days. You know, she had everything going for her, but something was missing. How did you develop that character?
Well, to be quite honest, that character was me.
I kind of thought so. I'm like, I want to know who got that character.
It did start off to be some sort of quirky memoir, but I thought in order to kind of get some distance from it and kind of, you know, write it from a place of where I can kind of, like, you know, as a fiction writer, I'm more comfortable kind of stepping back from it a little bit. But a lot of it has to do with what I went through in my life. And I think a lot of people, you know, that I relate to, and some of my friends have read it as well, have related to it. I think there's a lot of people these days, you know, not just maybe these days, but in their lifetimes, have gotten to a certain point of their life and going, yeah, this isn't what I had hoped for, what I planned for, and although everything seems to be good, there's something missing. And, you know, one person who read the first chapter thought it sounded selfish. You know, we should be grateful that we have, you know, a doting husband. We should be grateful we have a job. We should be grateful for all this stuff that we have, for the food on our table. But I think what is coming out these days is a more attention to ourselves and our soul and our soul purpose and what our true mission is and what we could really truly give to the world instead of just being, a digit in the population, you know, or just sort of the status quo. There is something else beyond that we can become. And even though it's kind of sounds a little selfish, these existential funks push us to, like, the next level of evolution, pretty much, how I feel.
Well, you're masterful in how you craft things, too, because it seems as though it just flows right through you. And all of that, you're so creative that and I think with you doing meditation, and you also do yoga and painting and all that, it's like you were here before and you're here to tell a story. And we're so grateful to have a friend like you and someone calling on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in Cocoa, Florida. Because so in today's world where there's so many things that are happening that are bad and evil, it's nice to have people that see the world in through colors. And when you see the world in that way, it's almost like Hinduism, you know. You could be, no matter where you go, there's colors. And even if it's a death, even if it brightens up your day, you know.
Yes.
It should be about, the flowers and the birds and the bees. And life goes on even after tragedy. And you're able to bring it all in through your paintings and what you do.
And I think that's the other thing, too, is, you know, because I've studied Hinduism, I'm initiated into Hinduism, it's like death is not the end, it's just another beginning. And I think I think a lot of our culture today is so fearful of this idea of death that I think that's what, you know, is making a lot of the problems that we have today, is when you realize that that's not the end. I mean, that's just a transformation into something else. I mean, that could be the death of a marriage, it could be the death of a job, it could be an actual physical death from lifetime to lifetime. But when you believe in this sense of reincarnation as an act of nature, you know, like the trees reblooming at springtime and then falling off the trees at autumn, when you see life as cyclical and it's all part of the natural process, everything becomes less fearful. And, you know, you can look at the chaotic world today and you can look at all the problems in the world today and say, this is just cyclical. You know, we're in the process of transformation. And yes, it's painful and hard to watch, but
it's just part of the process. Like, yeah,
it's part of the process,
right? Yeah. And your characters, the depth of your characters, you it's almost like you trace them from their past life and you bring them back to modern day existence. How do you do that in such a masterful way?
I think it's listening, and it's through meditation or through, you know, I'm an expert daydreamer, you know, like I can daydream better than pretty much almost anybody, but it's pretty much through meditation and allowing them to speak and allowing, and I know that sounds like, oh, you know, hoo-hoo-y and new agey or channeling, but it really is just listening. It's just listening to, you know, the voices that come through meditation or through, and just allowing, stepping away and just allowing them to speak and allowing them to tell their story. Because a lot of, you know, if you trace back to the Celtics and how they had, the ancient Celts, they believed in speaking to the ancestors. You know, they spoke to the gods. They allowed them to speak through them. And so it was not that their ancestors died. They were still there, but in a different realm. You know, the gods walked among them, but they were there.
They respected them, too. They had a lot of respect. And I think that's one of the things that's lacking in today's world is respect and knowing that our words do matter, you know. And it's almost like back then people, they did what they had to do to survive, but they also showed the respect and to the people that came before them.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, I knew that there was wisdom in that.
So with the couple of minutes left, we're going to hold our ads for a minute, Paul, so maybe we'll give you an extra minute or so. So what, what other books are you working on? Because all your characters seem to be people that all of us can relate to.
Well, yeah, and the other book I'm working on is Wolf Wild Heart, which just a real quick plug to my father. He was doing ancestry and found out that we were related to royalty. And so this was really kind of curious to me, and I really kind of clung on to Anna Kiev and her story. And so that was a really interesting to allow her story to come through me, and because it had nothing to do with what the political propaganda of her story, but more so a story of love and loyalty for, you know, that was during the early ages of the medieval times. So it was really interesting to get involved in that period as well.
Yeah, I know. But so just to ask you really quick, just to move away from that topic really quick, do you have any authors that you actually admire yourself that maybe you've kind of patterned your writing after them?
Yes. The main one is John Steinbeck. I am a huge John Steinbeck fan, almost to the point of just sort of idolizing him. The other one that really kind of... is a Czech author called named Milan Kundera, and he was also one that really inspired me. Very kind of had a very, both of them engaged in humanities and art and politics, and both of them I think were the biggest influence of mine.
Wow, you're amazing.
So what inspired you to get out of bed every day?
Writing. I have a day job, which I'm kind of playing a little hooky today, but I do have a day job, but usually it's writing, and it's just, you know, sometimes it's hard, but I get up like an hour, I get up actually really early at 4:30 to go writing for like an hour and a half before work, and I, you know, every morning I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm crazy, but it's just, you know, the stories just want to come out, they want to be told.
Well, it's inspiring, you're inspiring everyone to get a journal and start writing as well, and you're very disciplined, which I like that about you. I can tell from your Facebook post, you think about things before you say them. You know how some people just write something because they want to? You don't do that. You really think about your post.
Sometimes I do.
But I like them because, you know, you do get me engaged, and I think a lot too when I see your post. But you do care about humanity, Jen, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to call in. What, do you have a website if someone wanted to go and check all your creative pieces that you've drawn and maybe read about the books as well?
Sure, it's www.jennifer.ott.com, jennifer.ott.com.
Well, you know, your parents are smiling in the audience listening to you. You have made all of us proud. I hope when you come to Florida, we all meet up. I owe you a nice vegetarian meal. I'll make you a really good dish with lentils and rice and raisins. I will make a little chicken, too, and I hope you meet Kat. Her son is a fashion model. And he also acts, and he's absolutely gorgeous. I'm sure when you meet him, you might have a story to write about him, too. Tell her your son's name.
His name is Mario, and he is, you know, but done about a couple movies now, and he's up for a real big movie now. So everyone keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, and she takes the time to cart him around from his school to his auditions and stuff, and I follow her on Facebook. Great things happening to all our friends. But Ellen, anything you want to add to our friend Jennifer Ott? I know Carl and Jean, do you guys want to say hi to her? They're just listening. They're just excited that you were able. I would love to have you call in again. I think Ellen is going to ask you really quick for the website one more time, Jen. Sure.
Yeah, I've got jenniferott.com. Is that correct? Okay. And then I've got a great picture of you on Facebook, and we have that all on our Facebook page as well as our website. So make sure you tune in. If you want to catch any of this, you'll have an MP3 right after the show.
Thank you, Jen.
Right, thank you so much.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
All right, bye.
Is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love. From Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are having a really great show today. We had a robust first half an hour with our friend Jennifer Ott. She is an author that took the time to call in on our show from Long Beach, California. And wasn't it nice having her parents with us in studio?
Oh, they were so proud.
Yes.
So proud.
Yeah, we could see it in their faces. They were so proud. So for our listeners who are tuning in, each week Ellen Little and myself, we meet here in the studio. We record our show. We record it live. We also get a CD that Ellen is able to post on our website. And you can also listen live on the WWBC website as well.
Yes.
We talk to anybody who wants to come on the show. And you know, we try to keep it positive. Freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And so it's our responsibility to keep things positive while we're on air. And do what we can to help our society and our nation with so many things going on around the nation. So our second segment is going to be with a licensed attorney. Her name is Christine Leonin.
Yeah.
She's called in before, and she's going to call in to talk about her son's Drew. He was one of the sweet souls that lost his life in the Pulse massacre that happened.
And she was the first one, I remember, right after it happened, she was the first one that was on the news.
That's right.
We're looking for, yeah. That,
I remember,
yeah, remember
that.
Remember her?
To talk about. And of course, in studio, we have with us our good friend, Kat Maldonado. And Kat, I'm so proud of your boy. And so you can't tell us which movie yet, but you do know he's going to be.
I don't even know the movie. All I know is it's Pixar, and they called me on my cell phone, and I was extremely thrilled. But we're still waiting to hear if he actually got the part. So.
Yeah. So how do you, he's in school, and in between school you have to take him for all his shoots and everything.
Yes.
And you know, in the old days they used to say, you know, don't take your children to modeling and acting and all that unless you're involved. You have to be there. So you're hands-on.
And yes,
Him, you know, who's with him and
they
all that.
They let a parent come to just to everything. You know, you're with him all the time, and it's a great the kids learn self-confidence. The kids really learn to... I haven't seen any child being dragged in there not wanting to do it.
Kicking and screaming, right? I understand. So our second guest is on the phone, and for our listeners who are tuning in, it's our friend Christine Leonin. And Christine Leonin, you made me so proud on CNN the other night. I was just bursting with pride. Thank you for taking the time to call in on our show. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for giving me a voice, and by giving me a voice, you're giving my son a voice, and he... as your listeners may know, was shot and killed at the Pulse nightclub. So he doesn't have a voice anymore. And I'm appreciative for everyone in the media who wants to relay his message through me, whether it's Chris Cuomo or Sita.
Yes.
On your radio show. So we've spoken before, probably 2 or 3 years ago, way back when, and... I appreciate all the local media, and then that helps getting the message out or and back and forth. So here we go.
Well, thank you, because I firmly believe that our lives begin to end the day we keep silent about things that matters, not just to us, but to other people as well. And you have kept your son's memory, and to all of us who follow you on Facebook and, you know the story of Drew, our heart still breaks for you. But you are a good messenger for your son, and I think he speaks through you, even though his physical body is not on Earth.
Thank you, but like I say, I can't do it without you. So you give me the megaphone, and I appreciate that.
And so, well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background. You have an extensive bio, and I'm so proud of you. We just want them to know a little bit about you before we start talking about all the nice the things you're doing right now.
So I was a Michigan State Trooper, and I got an unplanned pregnancy, but a very well-wanted birth, and that was Christopher. And the interesting thing about Christopher's birth is I like to say he was surrounded by mommy love. There were five of us. There was me. I was a brand-new mom, of course. I fell madly in love with my son the minute I met him. And then there was my best friend, who was the mom of two kids, and the CNA was a mom, the RN was the mom, and the delivery doctor was a mom. So he just, he couldn't help but be loving, because he was surrounded by all this mommy love his whole life.
Yes. And so you, on CNN, when you were talking about Christopher, you were talking about, look, everybody wants to pay their bills, and everybody wants to make money, right? But at the same time, you just hit a lot of us right in our heart when you talked about what's happening over at the site of where Christopher died and 49 other people, that people are trying to capitalize on this. So tell our listeners a little bit of what's happening and why you got involved and wanted to get these signatures signed for this petition that you have going.
Well, I just found out, I had known that Barbara Poma, the owner of Pulse, I had followed different stories on the Orlando Sentinel where she didn't want to take the $2.25 million that the city offered her, then they were going to build a memorial park. And I have seen the site, and it looks very much more like an ad for first responders than it does. There's no mention of any of the kids except for behind a big glass wall, and then the kids are listed in just little tiny lettering that you can't even see and you definitely can't touch. So it seemed to me like for 3 years that's the best she could come up with, even though she's getting lots of donations. And then just in the last less than 2 months, somebody sent me the grant application for it's Pulse Nightclub is getting marketed as a tourist attraction. They're going to have, they're marketing it. They're trying to get those in the grant application, those highly sought after LGBTQ community dollars during the off season so that they could stay at Disney for 2 or 3 days or at the Orange County Convention Center and then spend an extra day in Orlando and visit this admissions charging museum that's also going to have a gift shop and give the owner of the nightclub a hefty $150,000 a year salary plus travel and expenses and celebrity. And this is a bar owner who doesn't have any experience running a nonprofit, and especially not a nonprofit of that kind of magnitude, taking in, you know, $50 million. And she doesn't have any experience running a museum. These two venues or avenues of business or nonprofits, those take years of education and years of going up the ladder and learning from the ground up how to run. And yet here she is, just because the tragedy happened at her nightclub where she lacked proper security to begin with, and now she's capitalizing on the massacre. It's like she hit the mass shooting lottery. And what I find even more disturbing is because Orlando is mainly a left-leaning liberal town, and they will be the first one to condemn someone from the alt-right for their bigotry. But yet, this is the only mass shooting that was done by a Muslim Arab American, and it's a mass shooting, and they're making it into a Muslim hate crime against gays. And that's not what it was at all. They're distorting the reality of what actually happened. And what happened was, it was an angry American male who had easy access to high-powered guns. And nowhere in this museum or in their so-called educational area are they discussing how to stop mass shootings or how to stop our gun violence in our country. They're making it all about being a Muslim attack against gays.
Right. It's more. It sounds like it's more about collecting money from the gift shop and the museum, and nothing to do to cure our nation's sick and violent gun culture. And it really does seem very inappropriate when you think about it. Why not do what you had said? I heard when you said they should make it like some sort of a monument, a place where people could go and offer a prayer, maybe put some flowers, think about the victims. But people are after the dollars from the LGBTQ community, and I think that they sat down and said, well, wait a minute, this is a way that they can spend. And it's just I think it's horrible to sell trinkets when something like this happened to someone's a child.
Yes, and that's how I feel, going back to what you just said about the memorial garden, a memorial park. My son's soul needs to rest, and so does mine, and so does the other mom.
And his boyfriend. He also lost his boyfriend.
Yeah,
in that.
Juan Guerrero, and Juan's dad, Juan, and sister, Ariam, and his mother, Miriam, they all support the Tear Down Pulse and the No Pulse Museum. It's obnoxious to us. It's been 3 years. This could have all been done. A nice, beautiful park that is zen, that is peaceful, quiet, reflecting, where people could come by to pay their respects and reflect on the tragedy in a nature-driven environment. Instead, the building is still up, and there are tour buses that come from the Orange County Convention Center specifically to go to Pulse and to gawk at the building that's all shot up, that's vacant, so that they could gawk at where my son was brutally murdered.
Yeah,
and that's what's been happening for the last 3 years. So they have no intentions of stopping that. They want to continue making it a tourist bus driven area for people who have, you know, death fetishes to gawk at.
Yeah, it should be. They should be talking more about the easy access to high-powered weapons and how a mass shooting occurred. Mm-hmm. That's what they should be talking about more than profiting. Because, I mean, we know that children died in Sandy Hook, but they didn't turn that into a business to sell T-shirts and trinkets.
Yeah.
We saw what happened in Parkland, and they're not selling chains or necklaces in a gift shop. So why, I mean, who came up with this idea to put a museum there and to sell things to make a profit off of it, claiming it's a nonprofit, but clearly they are going to profit from it?
Right.
Well, it's a private nonprofit. So the the everything is always going to stay in the control of private hands, and that's the Pomas, the whole family of Pomas who owned the building. And then another thing that the Pomas did, which tells you exactly where their mindset is, they underhandedly sold the Pulse Museum, or the Pulse name, the Pulse business, to their other restaurant. They have another restaurant, I think, in White Cloud or Kissimmee area. So they sold it for $100 so that they could keep that asset, the Pulse nightclub, away from the people who are suing her for negligent security. So they just shifted. They just pivoted. They went from being a profit-oriented business to they pivoted. They shut the Pulse name down as a bar, a nightclub, and they just made it One Pulse, a charity, but it's in private hands, and the private family is going to profit. They're going to get a salary. They're profiting from this
people's death
into perpetuity,
from the murder. They're profiting from other people's murder. So tell us, what can we do on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to help you to stop this museum?
Well, first, I started, and like I said, this has been less than 2 months that I've learned about this. And in less than, she only has 2,100 supporters of her Pulse Museum. In less than 2 months, in this change.org petition that I started, we have over 43,000 people who are opposed to this already, and it's still climbing. So we want to continue, as long as the change.org petition is climbing, we're going to let it climb, and then when it seems like it's leveling out, we're going to go and request a meeting with the Orlando City Council and request that they condemn Pulse as an eyesore and as a nuisance, and they take it over through their eminent domain powers, and they make a respectful memorial park, because we cannot. And, of course, we don't want to support the museum. So, and then I started a coalition with Zachary Blair. We started a community coalition against the Pulse Museum. So we just got that up and running. And we are having this tremendous progress in just a short amount of time. And the reason I'm saying this is because for the last 3 years, Barbara Poma has had access to the mailing list of the 300 victims who were in Pulse, either the family's name and addresses, the victims who were shot, the victims who escaped by running. She's been sending out propaganda for 3 years to all of us. And
well, it looks like we have to call, you know, we can't solve the problem unless we call it exactly what it is, and it's greed.
Right.
Right? And exactly. So it's good that you're going to do this.
Yeah, if we don't name it appropriately, we are being misdirected. So we have to call it what it is, a mass shooting, angry American male, a massacre, and then a private business. Nowhere else in the country, the hundreds and hundreds of mass shootings that we have, nowhere else in the country is there a museum for the mass shooting. And in most places, they even want to tear down the place where the shooting occurred. And the Pulse Museum, they're using the Oklahoma City bombing and the plane crashes into 9/11 as their guides to where there are museums on site. But they're mistaken, because the 9/11, the Twin Towers are no longer there. Oklahoma, the building was torn down. So they want to keep the Pulse building up as a tourist attraction.
Well, could it be, I know Ellen and I talk about this a lot, about location, location, location. Is it because they want to profit off of Orlando being a tourist place where a lot of people come? And it's so wrong, because one would think that you would want to put up a beautiful garden with a nice, you know, fountain of some sort, right. A wishing well, and even Kat's shaking her head. We're all saying flowers, where parents could go and grieve and sit down and connect with your children.
Yeah, she's educated me on this.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing such a great job. I mean, Kat, when she walked into the studio, our friend Kat Maldonado didn't know about this, and neither did a lot of our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and friends here in Florida. But I'm glad that you brought this out in the open. And like you say, you only found it a couple of months ago, and you're already up to so many people signing the petition, because no one wants other people to profit off the death of their children.
Right. And right now we're in the process. There's a woman from L.A. She's an investigative journalist. She started the National Compassion Fund, so she goes to all the mass shooting sites to make sure as many donations as possible could go to the actual victims and not into private hands. But she's putting that out on her mailing list to see if we can get other victims of mass shootings to also say what they feel about this. And, of course, they would probably all, if not most, you know, most or not all, be against it, because it just... it offends our sensibilities, just what we naturally think of as right and wrong. It's offensive. So if you can, you know, get on change.org.
I think I signed it already. Doing. I signed it already. But here, feedback are you receiving from the other family members of these people who were murdered at Pulse nightclub senselessly?
I am getting so much support. And even moms who can't even speak English are writing me in their broken English saying that they do not support a museum and they want Pulse torn down. These are moms who live in Puerto Rico or other non-English speaking countries like the Dominican. So I've been, and this is just me reaching out without me having a mailing list. This is just me putting it on Facebook and other people knowing somebody, and then they are reaching out to me. But we can sign the petition. We could write our, you know, our local officials, especially in Orlando, and let them know that this doesn't even make sense and why they signed on to this. We don't understand. We get that it's Disney World and it's kind of an alternative universe in Orlando with the, you know, fantasy fairy tales and the Magic Kingdom and everything. But this is about murder. This isn't a tourist attraction. This isn't a ride. This isn't the Tower of Terror. This is actual terror that people actually had. And I have victims who ran and victims who were shot who they just can't settle themselves either, because this is going on and going on and going on. And
Well, you know, Christine, you are an amazing mom. And I think any child would want to have an angel like you stand up for them. And I'm just thinking, as we were talking here, you wouldn't see this kind of nonsense going on in El Paso. Nobody's going to go over there to put up a museum of what happened. But really quick, with the remaining time that we have left, we still have 5 minutes. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, let's just chat a little bit. I mean, I'm sure people will reach out to you from El Paso as well, but you wouldn't see the city council and the state reps and the senators in that state saying, hey, let's make a museum here. Right?
Of course not. And in fact, I went to El Paso 2 years ago. There was a documentary director who had invited me to see. He was from Manhattan, but he loved El Paso so much, he had a home there, and that's where he wanted to have his documentary shown. So he sent me to El Paso, and I got to meet a lot of people and became friends with El Paso. And El Paso is such a sweet, kind, loving community. Right from the time you get off the plane, it's a totally, the atmosphere is so amazing. And I was telling this director that I could see why he had a home there, that it was such a...
They're very sweet, kind-hearted people, from what I understand.
Oh, they are. And to think that evil now, you know, wreaked its ugly head there in that beautiful community, not that any community is deserving, it's not, but now they have to experience firsthand. And this was a Mexican-hating white person. And we would think it was obnoxious to make it something different than what it was. It was a mass shooting. He had easy access to a AK-47 that his mom even called the police about. And they said there was nothing they could do because it's legal to have that weapon. And oh, which, by the way, another thing I talked about in Cuomo, which was a secondary issue, and this is something that's out there in the Parkland area closer to you, where Gail Schwartz, who started the bawnflorida.org, which is BAWNFL.org, and she's trying to get the voters in Florida to directly decide whether they want to have legal assault weapons or not in our state. Now, that wouldn't solve anything, but if a mother in this state, if we get that passed through this voter initiative on the 2020 ballot, and a mom is concerned that their son just bought an AK or has an AK-47, and they called the cops, and it was a banned weapon in Florida, we could just go there, arrest, confiscate the weapon and arrest the person.
Well, you know, we've always said that no mother wants to carry a child for 9 months and not get involved in what activities they're doing. And that would be really good if all the mothers get together behind something like that, you know.
Right.
But really quick, I just want to tell you that just to bring the conversation back to what's happening over at Pulse, I do believe that it reeks of, you know, self-interest and exploitation of those who were violently killed at the hands of a crazed gunman. And we have a couple minutes left, and I wanted, Kat wanted to know something really quick. She has a question for you.
Can you tell us more about the Drew Project? And I'd really like to be able to find it myself, too, and let people know where, you know, more about it. But can you tell us something about it?
Well, I have, for the time being, I have severed any connection with the Drew Project because there is one person who is on that board who has been disparaging me. She is trying to fast-track a business she just started, and she's attached herself to Palma and the Pulse Museum in an effort to get her business.
And that's your son's name, isn't it? Isn't that, you started that for your child, didn't you?
Well, my son called himself the Drew Project from the time he was in high school on. He just separated his name in half, Christopher Andrew Linenan, and he cut it in half, and he started calling himself Drew. But when he went to his creative areas, like on his Facebook and on social media and on his journaling and everything, then he made it a Drew with the D-R-U.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that because your name has been coming up with that project, so I'm glad you said that. But I know we have like 30 seconds left, and Ellen is going to take over from here. I just love your friendship and all everything that you had to say.
I love your friendship, too. I love watching how your kids are growing and getting married.
Yes. We've enjoyed having you on the show, and we just want to remind everybody that you can see all of the interview and hear all of the interview on our Facebook page and also on CETAMediaInc.com. And CETA, another great edition of Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. We'll see you next week, folks, here, right here at 1
o'clock. Thank you, Christine, for calling in. I'll catch up with you on Facebook. Okay.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.